Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Business Beyond Performance podcast. My name is Matt Powell. I'm here with the handsome as ever, Joe Staub.
Hey, I like that. I'll take handsome. I don't get that often. I'll take it. Actually, I don't think I've ever gotten it, so I'll take it.
Kings lifting kings. That's what it's all about. Just want to make sure you're getting that. Hey, this is one of those episodes I'm stoked about, right? This is one of those episodes where I feel like you can get a lot out of no matter what you're trying to do, whether you want to go into the business, whether you want to be a coach, whether you want to take that into a side hustle. This is Fergus Connolly, man. This is somebody who has been at the top with the San Francisco 49ers, somebody who's been there with the University of Michigan, and somebody who's also been there from an author, a speaker, you know, somebody who puts out content constantly that just really motivates people.
No, I know. It was actually kind of not a surprise because, again, right, so – Fergus is a great guy, always genuine with his time, always willing to communicate. And again, that's why he's on. But it's kind of one of those, like when I sent him the email to, hey, do you want to do this? And he got back to me and was like, yeah, I'm happy to do it. I was like, shit, really? Like, you're going to do this with us? So there was also a little bit of that, like, hey, man, like, one, we appreciate it. And two, he's a much bigger fish than us two small fries. So it was really cool to talk to him. Again, a great conversation, just his depth of experience, but also his background. I think that was something that a lot of people don't really know about him is his background isn't in, you know, the traditional exercise science. He comes at this from a whole different perspective, which I think is what's helped make him so successful.
Couldn't agree more. Obviously his background coming from Ireland as well, playing, you know, Gaelic football, which is one of my favorite sports to kind of mess around with. I am terrible at it. However, I enjoy running around and having a good time for sure. So to hear that and hear his stories about how he came up and he did what so many good young strength coaches, young dietitians, young athletic trainers and physical therapists do and cognitive performance coaches where they travel around and they learn from the best. But the problem is, I feel like and we talk about that in today's episode. Some people are losing that experience, which is unfortunate and is doing the entire field, no matter what your specialty, a disservice. So if you want to be the best, go and learn in that place from the best. If you can go spend time with some of the gurus in the field, go do that. I mean, obviously COVID withstanding, go do that to the best of your ability. Just doing a call or a text or an Instagram, that is not the same thing. You are not getting that same experience as going and spending a week, 2 weeks, a weekend, whatever you can do. So just something that he talks about and touches on, and also his development as a young coach and what really led to him being successful besides just visiting was how much of a sponge he was and what he was able to pick up from some of the best in the business. So just another huge thing that you and I both agree on. You and I both did. I can remember being a poor 21-year-old, 22-year-old college student or early graduate student and traveling places I had no business being, sleeping in the back of my car, just to spend time with people who I knew would make me a better coach or a better dietitian.
No, exactly. And it's one of those things where, you know, especially in the COVID and post-COVID world, being in person and learning and seeing the nonverbal, seeing, you know, how they manifest their environment is something you have to do. I mean, even for us, right? We're doing Zooms. We mention it more than once to multiple guests. Hey, when we're in person, hey, at a conference, hey, when we can drink a beer, hey, you know, because we both know that there is nothing like seeing the person live in the flesh and being able to kind of see how they do it all. What's the mannerisms, the body language, the aura, the vibe, you know, and get the temperature of the room with how they interact with athletes. So again, just a really awesome conversation and a guy who, you know, has a lot to show and a lot to give. And I hope a lot of people take something out of this.
Couldn't agree more. And I mean, the only other thing that I'll bring up is please make sure you go check out some of his writing, not just his books, but a lot of his articles and his content. He does a fantastic job of teaching young professionals how to build the best team around them, especially for that high performance model, which has obviously become so popular now on the American side. It's been popular in the European and the Australian, New Zealand side forever. So make sure you go check that out because it's a great way to learn for sure. But without any more of us messing it up, let's move on to episode 5 with Fergus Connolly.
Welcome back to another episode. Joe Staub here. I am sitting in my attic. It is a freezing cold snowstorm, nor'easter. You can see my kids' Christmas gifts in their Amazon boxes behind me. So yet again, we are here tonight, joined by Fergus Connolly, a guy who I have a ton of respect for and have, you know, followed and kind of learned from. And, you know, I have his books and always wanted to do this with. So this, for me, is a personally exciting episode. joined by our lovely and beautiful co-host, Matt Powell, as always, repping the Martin Strong shirt. For all you that don't know, Jerry Martin, NSCA, Jerry Martin Scholarship Fund. He was a legend and a mentor, one of the OGs of strength. So before we dive in, Fergus, I'll try and give you the best introduction I can. I apologize if I missed some things. You're a guy who, one of the things I found most interesting is your academic, you know, your trained background has nothing to do with sport in a way, but it is giving you the tools and resources to be very successful in your particular area of high performance and sport. Then you've had jobs throughout the gamut of performance. You've worked professional, you know, as a consultant and as a full-time employee in, you know, professional soccer around the world, you know, rugby, the military, American football, college, professional sports. You know, we can see on your picture the San Francisco 49ers, you had to stop it. So you're a guy who has an interesting background, has worked at pretty much every level, whether it was full-time or a consultant, and now you're out on your own. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't talked to you, you know, obviously outside of this moment where you're doing a little bit of all of it under your own umbrella. So thank you for joining us, and I hope that gave some justice to your story.
Yeah, it's been a long and, I was going to say long and crazy, long and winding road. But yeah, like, I mean, and so, sometimes it actually took me a while to figure out really what it was, what was driving it, I guess. But for me, really, it's been about trying to understand how humans, and in particular in teams, you know, work well together, how to optimize and win. And that's been the most interesting part of the journey for me, because when I started out, you know, playing sport in Ireland, wasn't particularly good. I was struggling, trying to figure out how to get better. Started strength training, you know, speed training, endurance training, trying to find, you know, one source or one resource that would help me improve. And then trying to figure out, how do you get a team together? How do you, then how do you become a leader? How do you lead that team? Mm-hmm. And you make a lot of mistakes along the way. As you know, I know Matt's going to cringe when he hears that, hears this, but it's just not always, the answer always isn't just more weight on the bar. Sometimes it takes us a while to figure that out. But yeah, so winning, like, what does it take? And then, you know, how do you sustain it? How do you build a team and build people who can repeatedly win, can really dominate in their space?
Yeah. So one question I have right away, first of all, just like Joe, I'm super excited to talk to you just because you have such a diverse background and you've been to so many cool places and done so many interesting things to integrate new technology, new information, new ways of looking at problems. But did you play Gaelic football, rugby, soccer? Yes, yeah. What were the sports?
Gaelic football. Yeah. And, our family had moved back from the States. So I was trying to learn the game at a young age, you know, fast 14, 16. And I, you know, you're always out of position because you don't know the game, but you think it's fitness. So, you know, you go, okay, well, so it must be endurance running. So you try and find, because there aren't any many books out there on team sports. So you go and find endurance running. And then you realize, okay, I've lost a step. I'm not explosive. It must be speed. And I'm getting knocked off the ball a bit. So it's strength. And you start to try and pull all these things together. And you're just making mistakes. Just, that's all you're doing. And back in the day as well, starting to sound old, but, you know, it was different than it is now. Because it was easier to go and travel and visit people, and certainly with COVID, but it was easier to, you know, find the expert, go and visit them. So, you know, sometimes even go and watch them coaching their team. It's a lot harder to do that now. And you didn't have the wealth of information that's available on, you know, on the internet, good and bad. So I regard myself, it cost a fortune, cost me a lot of time, but I regard myself as being fortunate to have had no other option, because the only thing I know is going to go and visit people, try and learn, try and research, for better or for worse. You know, that's what I did.
Absolutely.
Go, Paul. Cutting you off, man. As always, stepping on your toes.
You're good, man. So one of the things that, you know, I learned personally as a guy who kind of competed at a very, very small level in GAA, you know, on the American side, learning a little about Gaelic football, is that's one of those sports that has a touch of every single sport in it, right? You're playing a little bit of soccer, a little bit of rugby, a little bit of almost, I hate to say, you know, frisbee, but it's kind of that mm-hmm. spacing and that open wide field. So being able to play all those different aspects is kind of, from the outside looking in, part of the reason why you built into what you did with so many parts of the teamwork and everything else. So it's really cool to kind of hear that story. So you're at the University of Limerick, right? You're learning, you're going through your mm-hmm. school. Who did you go visit first and who did you learn from first as you were going through this journey?
So funny, at the time, the first sports science course was starting in Ireland. And I thought about doing it because I was obviously interested in it, but I didn't see a career in it, believe it or not, after all these years. But and I thought long about going to do it. And I would spend time in the physiology section in the library and try and read and study just to make myself better. And there were coaches there who I would try and learn from. In fact, people used to think that I was doing sports science because I spent that much time in that section. And the first real coach outside of Ireland was a guy called Ashley Jones, who was the All Black strength and conditioning coach. And he's a legend. And I was apologetic going to visit him because I was going, listen, I'm not a strength coach, but I want to learn. He was probably looking at me going, but he was so generous, so kind, he was more than willing to help me in any way. And I was just there to learn. I was like a sponge. I just loved learning and picking up. And that was the first time I started to realize, okay, there's a little bit more to this than just the strength element, because I started to see how valuable, like, for example, his personality was in the weight room and stuff like that. And, he had a brilliant balance of science and art, or communication, or whatever you want to call it. Then there were lots of others. Like, I mean, I went to visit Charlie Francis, even Dan Paff. I remember being down visiting Dan Paff in Chula Vista, and you could, hammer thrower could probably throw a stone over the Mexican border. That's how close we were. Like, you could hear shots being fired, and the prison was and barely having enough money. And I didn't know if I had enough money to get a cab back and stuff. Stuff like that. And you're scrimping and scraping. But you just want to learn, I tell this to young coaches all the time, but I don't think that maybe they appreciate it. You learn much more by going visiting people, because you pick up on nuances. Like Dan would say stuff, or Charlie, even Dan, just watching him coach and his manner, how he spoke to different athletes. And I didn't really realize it at the time, but it was intuitive in his part. And those are the things that you maybe miss out, on when you don't go and visit people or see them working in practice.
No, to your point, Jerry used to always say it to us, and me and Matt both being Kramer guys, Matt did his master's with Kramer right around the time we shared some time at UConn together. That's how we know each other. You need the science of training, but you need the art of people, because at the end of the day, it's not as simple as do this, set rep scheme or do this program or this XY progression, because someone's got to do it. And that person is a different person every single time. So you hit on
it. I still remember his book coming from Periodization Breakthrough, Fleckenkramer. I still remember opening that book up like 20 years ago when it came out or whatever. Again, someone like that's been such a huge influence on the industry. So, again, that's another legend of the industry. There's so many of them out there. Even for someone like him, to recognize. And that's an incredible point as well, that, you can be training the same athlete, maybe even doing the same session, but they're a different person mm-hmm. on two different days. And, early on, I thought it was all about knowledge. I thought it was, even later, I thought it was about data. Mm-hmm. You train a person.
Yeah. Well, even to the point before we started recording, you guys were referencing in the tactical space and understanding, the optimization paradigm. And it's something, again, me and Matt have a mutual friend who's in active duty in the SF community. And for me to him, over his life cycle, being 23 to now, in his mid-30s, I've talked to him, I'm like, every single time you do something, if you're doing the same thing as the guy next to you, You're not, though, because the guy next to you has these problems and this injury and this history and this pathway and this development. Like, I was like, that's the biggest, to me, one of the biggest falsehoods of the industry, to your point, is the knowledge is great, but understanding how it applies to that particular person in that particular moment is something people just kind of like, whoo, they gloss over. And it's like, well, that's actually the magic sauce, is that moment of how they respond. But it's something people miss. So
yeah, and it's also interesting as well, because in particularly as guys get older, you know, you question, okay, how much do I teach them, educate them, and do I listen to them? And you want them to become the best. I said this actually to Ashley Jones. I said, the best compliment I can give you is that your guys are some of the most educated I've ever seen in terms of what, because guys would come in and say, Ash, I'm working on my shoulder. Will I do this, this, and this exercise? Some of which I hadn't heard but of before. So he was teaching his guys, but that doesn't always work in every community. So again, you know, if you can develop that, then you get even a deeper level of feedback. So yeah, it's so critical to know who it is that you're speaking with.
No, a couple guests before you, we had Josh Bonital from Future. You might know the name. He used to be at Purdue with men's basketball, and he talked about building a athlete-driven, athlete-centric environment, where to your point, guys could walk in, they knew what to do. They, you know, again, some of the athletes I had, it was like, hey, we got a back squat today. Is that the one where the bar is here or here? Like, you know, it's like, you don't even put your feet right in the same spot. Like, you, never mind, just, you know. Whereas for him, he was able to build a dynamic and a culture where it was player-led and player-driven. But again, it was support from the coach. In his world in college basketball, support from the coach, support from administration. He had the skill set to do that. He had the right people and the right leaders on the team to do that. So it's not just you choosing to do it. It's the combination of things.
Absolutely. And then, so, you know, I remember this was with the Welsh rugby team at the time. I remember standing in the Welsh anthem is in Welsh. And I remember saying to one of my coaches, you know, we should really learn this anthem. And he said to me, is that going to help us win? But his point was like, you mean, how much time do you invest in something, you know, getting bang for buck? And so, yeah, if you can do that, and, you know, that's the ideal scenario. And if you can do that, then you'll build that. Mm-hmm. And that's the ideal case where guys know and they're starting to give you feedback. It makes you a better coach as well.
So take us, and again, I know I've been there traveling around. Everywhere I would travel with a team, I'd always try and find the coach of the team I played or another person in the area. I know Matt's done the same. So you're on this journey, right? You're on the education journey, your big hero's quest to learn.
Well, that's the funny thing. Okay, so I, it was just sound like a drug dealer, I had a shoebox with money. You know, just honestly, this is the truth. I would put money in this box, dollars or euros, whatever it was. And I would save. And when I figured I had enough, then I would try and reach a coach and see if I could go visit. Mm-hmm. And university at the time was the best time for me because, you know, I had a path and a vision and a purpose and knew what I was doing. I was going on to be a woodwork teacher. And I stayed on. I did a master's because I was going to do a PhD, which I did in computer-based optimization. But in truth, I was just using my time and my vacation time to train, learn more about sport, travel, see who I could visit. When I finished that, then I taught for a year or two. But again, I was just so interested in sport. But now I had an income, so a little bit more money. I could travel a little bit more. I would go and do conferences. I took one or two sick days here and there to, you know, take a Friday off or a Monday. And then on one of the visits to Bolton Wanderers after I came back, they changed their coaching staff. So I get a call, hey, Fergus, you know, our coaching, we've lost like a sports science element. Didn't have actually a sports scientist, but we were looking for an assistant strength coach, sports scientist. You know, you seem pretty knowledgeable and interested. Would you be interested? So I took a career break and never went back teaching. And that was really how it started. Like, I mean, I was fortunate again. But again, I don't think that doesn't happen if you don't go and meet people. You don't get out and meet people.
Yep.
And so I was in soccer for a year or two and then went to Welsh rugby team. I did some consulting then for a number of teams for a few years in just across the UK and the States as well. Because that was just at the time that sports science, like GPS, people were starting to hear of it. And then went to the 49ers then, which was just at the end of the Harbaugh era. Then went with Jim to Michigan for two and a half years. And yeah, and since then, just consulting with sports teams and, you know, some of the military units and in business. And so, like, you mean, and in between that, just getting asked to, like, with cricket, like, you mean, cricket in Australia, you know, getting, you know, being asked to go and consult or, you know, help them. And the fascinating thing about all the teams is as you move from team to team, you think that, you know, what you're doing is in each team is very different, but it's keys on a piano. It's just that some keys are played more. Mm-hmm. And the more that you do that, you know, the more you start to realize it. And what I remember clearly going from soccer to rugby, I did not want to go to rugby, did not. But there was a great group of coaches, and that's what excited me. And I thought, I'm going to really struggle here. I don't really know the game. I want to stay in soccer. But when I get there, I was really out of my comfort zone. And then I started to see some similarities. And I saw that the greatest learning curve for me was making that change. And from then on, change doesn't, you know, I realized that was the benefit. The benefit was the change, was being uncomfortable. So moving from sport to sport actually is the greatest growth phase for a coach. Mm-hmm. Whereas many coaches move the opposite way and don't want to. Or actually many coaches even don't get the opportunity to. You know, they're considered, oh, you're a football guy, or you're a basketball guy.
So
I
know Matt's got one lined up. I just want to jump in and make a point. So as you're explaining that, all I'm thinking is Musashi, know the way broadly and see it in all things. Because so as a person, when I was in the college space, I never wanted to be a football guy. I actually turned football jobs down, and the same for basketball. I was pegged at the end of my career as a basketball guy because I had UConn and Kansas on my resume and the people I worked with. But I purposely worked Olympic sport because it gave me variety. Maybe it's my ADD. Maybe it's because as a decathlete, like jack of all trades, master of none, but I enjoyed every different hour, half hour, 2 hours, whatever it may be, having a different group of people, male, female, field sport, contact sport, you know, different, you know, basically a team of walk-ons compared to a team of scholarship future millionaires. You know, that to me was the best part of the job. If I only had to work one group of people, I don't think I would have stayed in the profession for 2 years because it's just not me. So great point.
I think for a lot of people, the fundamental desire is, you know, is security. People want security. And one way to have security is to have predictability. And so you get to a point and then you tend to plateau out and you go, okay, I know what's coming next. So I've worked hard to get this security in my life. And I think that, but the life's not like that. Life's chaotic. And once you start to get comfortable, that's when life hits you in the face and throws up. So even like, for example, with COVID, people have got this comfortable routine or pattern and they feel secure about it. And then all of a sudden COVID comes along and people struggle and don't know how to adapt. And those are important skills, I think, to keep.
So one thing you've done a great job of illustrating is how important it is to go out and create that connection, go out and visit, especially as a young coach that you were at the time. Can you give any like pointers or suggestions? Because I know I kind of had my way of doing it, but I would love to hear how you kind of got into that door, if you don't mind.
Early on, you know, I approached coaches that I just wanted to learn from. And I learned early on as well that it wasn't about what you could just take. You know, it wasn't that I wanted to come and take things. And it wasn't, like, I never asked for a program. Like, I never said, oh, can you give me that program? In fact, like, Ashley Jones gave me, there's something I really, really wanted. Like, I mean, would you mind if I took? And it was, and it also became, you know, I was genuinely interested in, and I used to have quite, like, I mean, so tell me Somebody asked me the question once. I thought it was brilliant. They said, "So tell me why that worked, or tell me why you did that, as opposed to saying like, why did you do that, or was there a reason behind this or that?" And if you ask it rather than saying, "Why are you doing that?" Because you're genuinely interested. Because very often you see something you think is wrong, but you don't know the why behind it. And only that's happened to you once, and you realize, no, you're the one who's misinterpreting it. And there's always so much information there, and rationale and reasoning. And I've always been a keen, I guess, observer of things. You know, there's always a difference as well between learning something or taking something in and being present. And sometimes you learn more by not even asking questions, but by being present and truly absorbing things. And so there's a balance there. But with the person asking, you know, question, if you're genuinely interested, you will.
So I think that's perfect, because I think a lot of young coaches, or at least what I see now with a lot of guys who ask me all the time about tactical side or how I got to different experiences like the NFL, similar to yourself, they don't ask me how I did it. They just say, you know, who did you know, or what did you know, or how did you, right? Because I know you've gotten that question before for sure, but it doesn't become about the whys and the small steps and the habits you created and the connections you genuinely made. It becomes, how did you do that? Okay, cool. I'm going to go do that. And then they're just gone. They're mentally gone. They're physically gone. They think they can just take that and kind of roll. Is that something you've seen as well?
Great point. Yeah. And it's, And the other thing too is, I think there's a phenomenon now, which the education system breeds it, is, you know, tick off this qualification or that qualification, and it's never about that. And I think that's unfortunate as well, because there's so many qualifications, certifications, which are all valuable, but it's not just about that. It's very difficult. One of the other interesting things as well is that a lot of coaches, you know, when they write stuff and they publish stuff, it's retrospective, so it's looking back and it allows them a clearer view. But when you're going on your journey, it's not supposed to be clear. Like, it's not a clear pathway. There's supposed to be lots of shifting and bumps and bouncing around and really being in that moment. But yeah, it's never about like, what did you do or who did you know? You have to build those. Like, I mean, Dan Papp's been a huge mentor of mine, still is. Like, I mean, and we'll text each other 4 or 5 times a day at a minimum, but just about different stuff and sharing things. You know, nobody's looking for anything. You see something interesting about Dan, I got to get Dan's opinion on that, or what does he think, or he'd like that. And, you know, that's, so it's really a case of building. And also, like, finding like-minded people who are really interested in trying to solve problems. Far too many people are, you know, just focused on a solution rather than really understanding what the problem is.
I think the thing that you hammered there, that was an amazing point, you kind of ran through it because you had so many good points in a short amount of time there, was the part about being present and being able to look at your coaching as you are at that moment. Because there are so many 24 to 28 year old coaches who think they should already be the first assistant at a major college, or they should be in the NFL or the NBA, whatever their goal is. And they don't understand to take a step back and enjoy where they are and to take it and make it the best experience possible, not only for them, but for the staff around them, the athletes around them, the administration potentially around them. But being present is something that I know I struggle with as a young coach, and I consistently see that as well. So I'm really glad you mentioned that for sure.
Now, that's a great point, because you write a program and you want to see how it works, and it works. So you think that's it, but you don't take the time to reflect maybe and go, why did it work? Like, I mean, what was the why behind that? Because it might be for a different reason than you thought, or you get someone else's program and you copy it and they did it this way, so it has to work for me, and then it doesn't work, but you don't know the why. And that's, you know, that takes time to reflect on and to understand. And the other, you know, the other thing too is, like, many coaches will write programs specifically for obviously their athletes. So it's going to work for their athletes, but also the time and the context you get that program, it's not going to work for you. And then you still have to have the art of implementing it, you know. And so there's a, you know, Charles Poliquin said to me a long time ago, he said, you know, you got to coach in that moment. You know, there's sort of like, again, Charles is another guy who, you know, spent a lot of time around. He was an interesting dude, but he had a, like, I mean, when you got Charles one-on-one, he was a very, very bright guy, very smart guy, and would, yeah, he had some incredible insights. I remember one day sitting with him in Dublin around a table. He was doing a seminar. He had somebody else doing the seminar, and it was just myself and himself. I'd known him for a number of years, you know, but again, that's the value of sitting down with someone one-on-one and getting to know them. And, you know, you start to understand the why behind why they do certain things.
No, great point. So there's two things in here. One, take notes, right? Like, you made a great point of it's not always about asking the question in that, at that second, it's being present. So for me, it was drilled into our heads from the people we learned from at a very young age, you know, have a notebook, take a note, because you may have a question, but it's not the right time to ask it, but there is a time to ask it. And to your point, getting one-on-one time or getting time after a group or, you know, another day, another week, another month to really drill into something. And I know from just getting hit in the head too many times in sports and in life, I forget stuff, so I write it all down. The one thing I'll say to that is the movie Limitless. Anytime I had younger professionals in any industry, any category, say that, you know, they wanted the bigger paycheck, they wanted the bigger job, they weren't ready yet, they didn't get it yet. I would say, hey, have you ever seen that movie Limitless with, you know, Bradley Cooper? And they're like, yeah, okay. And I'm like, okay, so there's this one part, and it's real short, it's about 2 minutes. It's Robert De Niro and it's Bradley Cooper in a hallway. And Robert De Niro basically says to the effect of, you know, you want to sit at the table, but you haven't earned it. You haven't done it. You haven't gone through the slog, you know. And I was like, you know, in the strength and conditioning industry, it was just to tell people, that's where people say, you know, you got to earn your stripes. You know, you got to put the time in, you got to work for free. All the things that strength and conditioning and the ecosystem of that world puts on people. And they put it on that way. And in the movie, he was referencing it. And again, a lot of people didn't get it. It just flew over their head because he had these superpowers in the movie and he could be that guy. It was like, well, unless you have that magic pill, you're not that guy. So you need to put the time in. You need to go on the adventure. You need to find the people. You need to get the one-on-one time. You need to be in the moment and be engaged and constantly develop. So again, as you're explaining all that, that's what I think of, is that like one, I think it's about minute and a half clip in that movie. And De Niro's like, you know, you just haven't done enough to be where you're at. And, you know, Bradley Cooper obviously doesn't get it because he's on magic pills. So it's easy. You know, it's always easy when you have the magic pill.
No, those are two great points. Like, I mean, I always have a notebook with me in my hip pocket and the pen. Actually, I have it here as proof. I always have a notebook with me because I'll forget something. And I might just scribble down a word that I've got to go and research later because it's something that's popped into my head. Could be something in the training room or the locker room that we didn't have. Need to make sure I got that the next time. Small things like that. Because it's perfect. Amazing things.
We got to get you on that rocket book. And that's a little old paper notebook. Digital, man. You write it down.
I'm getting old. I'm getting old. But the other point too about like Limitless, like, I mean, people misunderstand that, you know, idea that you got to put in the time. It's about putting the time in, but being in the moment. Like, it's not about clocking up. It's about, you know, being there and seeing the opportunity you have to learn. And, you know, if you're a young kid, you only have two guys to train. Well, train them the best that you can and learn as much from that. Use that time. And the other thing too, like, I mean, I've worked with groups that weren't good coaches, for example, or I was working for a coach who wasn't, whatever. You learn so much from that as well. Like, you know, it's not, you know, you might be working for someone who, and you don't have a lot to say, well, learn everything from what they do wrong then. You know, figure out why. You can always learn something. I use this quote all the time. You know, wise man will learn from a fool, but a fool won't learn from a wise man. And it often makes me think when I'm in a conversation, if I'm not learning something, well, that means I'm the fool. So, you know, you got to learn. There's always something to learn.
So taking everything we're saying, right, I look at this as a great transition point to add in. Well, you did learn because you started doing all these other things. So now let's get into, we kind of have your journey of how you got into the coaching side. You're a best-selling author. You're a speaker. You're actively engaged in multiple different parts of the human performance. You know, that's kind of the catchy word these days, industry. So how did you decide to start branching out into those other things, right? It's time, it's effort, it's energy to write a book. It's time, it's effort, it's energy to learn the skill set and translate the skill set into a different avenue of the sports space. How'd you get there and how'd you do it?
Well, for me, my brain works in terms of models. So if I've got an athlete, for example, I see it as a model. So I start to either write a program. But so when I started out, you know, it was all strength training or it was speed or whatever. And that obviously wasn't it. So you're going, okay, we're not winning or we're not doing whatever. So how do I get better at that? So you go and figure out, okay, well, this kid seems to be suffering from confidence or vision or whatever. So you go and you research as much as you can there. And so the journey for me, you know, even in terms of sport or tactical or business, is like, it's clearly about how do you get a human to perform regardless as to the domain to their best their ability. And you, and then it becomes about life, because even me personally, but even working with athletes, you see, okay, many of the issues that are going to crop up are not in the domain. They're in their life issues, or they're managing stress or emotion. And, but in terms of writing, for me, the writing bit, and now, you know, I went to see two guys down San Diego today. It was to present a model to get them to break it. And when I write, it's, this is the best knowledge I have at this point in time. I'm putting it out there so that I can get criticized. People think that you write a book because you know it all. Well, for me, it's, this is what I believe at this moment in time. This is how I do it. I'm putting it out there. It'll help some people, but I actually get more from the criticism. People think that, you know, there's one far world-renowned author, and his best friend, who is also an author, was telling me, I was asking him about the criticism that he got about reading this book, his best-selling book, I won't name, but he said to me, he said, he doesn't care. He writes the book and he publishes and it's out there. And then he listens to what's said, but the criticism itself doesn't bother him. This was before I'd written Game Changer at all. And that was what convinced me, just press play, like let it go and see. And the big advantage as well of writing, like, I mean, as you know, Joe, you write, you put all these ideas together, that actually makes you better. Like having to synthesize it, having to put it together.
You got to own it.
And you got to own it, but you got to make it clear to explain to someone else. And that makes you so much better. And people don't, you know, I wish more people did it. It helps clarify, synthesize your thoughts and your ideas. You find where the holes are in it. It's not going to be perfect, but you're putting yourself out there, so go for it.
Agreed. One of the things I've always said to, and it was the approach I took with everyone who's ever worked for me or I've been responsible for, was I need to get you to know what I know so you can be better than me, but I need you to be able to teach it to someone else, because knowing things is great, but being able to teach what you know is literally the most important thing you could ever do. So in my opinion, if you want mastery, however you want to phrase it, you want mastery of the subject, you want to be, you know, the apex of your abilities. If you can't translate that to someone else, not the way you know it, but the way they need to hear it so they know it, that's the difference, right? Just being able to say it. But if I can get you to understand it the way you need to understand it so you can do it, I know it very well.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And again, you know, I learned that from, again, going to seminars and watching some people who had brilliant ideas, but it took you a long time to figure out exactly what they're trying to say. In fact, you probably interpret it wrong. But then you go to other presenters who presented in a way that some people might regard as simple or not accurate, but you understand it. And it's up to you if you want to go and learn more. And so the process of, and actually, you know, last few weeks I've been recording. What I've done is taken a lot of the videos and presentations that I've given over the years and recorded them again, but this time explaining the why behind them. Like, some of them are very short, some of them are longer, but explaining, like, why did I present it in this way? And the rationale behind presenting it is more important than the content, because you're trying to trigger emotions, change habits, behavior change. And that, it's such an important point. Because I would look at coaches who, you know, maybe, you know, had only done certain level, but were brilliant at their job. And then you go and you would see other coaches who are far more qualified or master's, PhDs, but can't coach or just can't build a relationship. And, you know, so again, if you keep looking at how do I get better? What am I not doing right? Why are they having a better response than I? And be really, like, brutally honest with yourself. You'll figure out what you got to learn. And a lot of that comes down to understanding the person.
Yeah. No, agreed.
So I remember visiting an NFL team. I was a young graduate assistant or undergraduate, somewhere in that range. And I visited them and I asked one of the assistants, because, you know, the head strength coach was obviously busy. He's got more things going on, more responsibilities. And I said, what do you think allows you to be the most successful with this group of guys, right? Being in the NFL, what allows you to be successful here? And he said, you're getting your master's degree, your undergraduate degree, whatever you're doing. I said, yes, sir. He said, none of that matters. You need to learn how to be able to talk to them, explain information to them, and get them to understand and actually want to do the crap they don't want to do. And that was the moment I stepped back and I was like, wow, all right. That was a very quick, you know, 2-second explanation about what coaching is really all about. And I'm sure it's similar in the business world. And I know for sure it's the same in the tactical world about getting that guy to do what they don't want to do for an intelligent reason and having a why behind it.
Yeah. And like, I mean, it's so important that you understand the person. I remember speaking of Poliquin, like, me, he had so many great one-liners, but he had given like a 5-day course. And so I'm there for the whole 5 days. And at the end, it must have driven him mad. Like, and Charles is very, very, could be very rough. But anyway, at the end, some guy puts his hand up and goes, hey, Charles, okay, you know, this method, that method. What's the single best method out of all of them? After 5 days, you know, Charles looks at him and goes, best program is the one the athlete will do. And, you know, people start to laugh. But he was so right. Like, I mean, if a guy's not going to do it. And the other point as well is, you know, it depends on the area of the community, but, you know, you got to win. So it doesn't matter if it's the best program on paper. You're not winning, and then it's the wrong program.
Yeah. Well, you made a great point to that a little bit ago when you were talking about, you know, you start with, you know, it was strength and conditioning and power, and then it became more about, you know, psychology and, you know, fusion mind if it's a team thing. But I have a note to myself. We didn't get into it, but we ended up coming back to it right now is, all of that is great when it's defined around the goal. And in sport, the goal is to win. Or, you know, if it's an individual, it's to win your contest, your competition, perform a personal best. You know, in the tactical setting, it's to dominate, right? To win. That has winning in that space is a much different meaning than in a sport field. But go into that a little bit more. As a guy who's worked at all different levels in all different areas, you know, up, down, left, right, how have you approached fitting your skill set into the bigger picture of winning when the people who, let me phrase this correctly, with the head coach or the administrators or the bosses who may not understand how those two things fit, but also how they don't always fit?
So, the one of the projects working out at the minute is the sustaining success project. So in other words, when you get to a certain level, how do you sustain success? But the first step is defining what success is. And in the tactical community or the sporting community, even in the business community, having that conversation is very, very important. Because in some cases, like, I mean, you look at some coaches or some programs and you go, is it really about winning? Because if it was about winning, that coach would be gone a long time ago. So Is it about winning or is it about creating the best brand? In the tactical community, is it bringing everybody home alive or is it, like you mean, is it kills or whatever it is? And that, you know, that's an important, because if you don't have clarity around that, and it's never just one line. There's always a hierarchy. But if you don't have that conversation, when the pressure comes on, then the goals are confusing to people. And they, particularly the people at lower levels, they see decisions being made that don't align with the stated objective. And that's something that can be very, very confusing. So you have to have, you know, a certain amount of honesty around this is what we're trying to do. When it comes to the organization as well, it's really about listening to what, you know, what the coaches or whoever the hierarchy are, like, what do they want, and delivering that. But if you don't have that conversation with them and you're not winning, they'll come back and say, well, you know, they're not fast enough. But hang on, I thought we wanted them strong. Well, which is it? And like you mean, now with one team, I remember the strength coach was trying to get linebackers, was at the time, get them as strong and as big as possible. Yeah, I went and had a conversation with the DC at the time, because, you know, we were putting the program. He wanted them light. He didn't want them above a certain weight. So you got the strength coach down below who's got this false, you know, impression. You're trying to manage the staff and you got one guy going in the opposite direction just simply because he didn't have the conversation. He was actually too afraid to have the conversation. So you got to know what that vision is, and then you can serve it. And when that's clear and it's been, you know, outlined to you, then you can achieve it. But, you know, you can't just, ride two horses with one ass. You know, you got to, it's only one. And the great thing about particularly strength coaches is they're happy to be judged. They just want to know what to be judged on.
So go into that a little further, right? For some of our audience, they're going to be on the very young, maybe it's the first time they're in there with a head coach or an administrator, right? So, and I know just from reading your material and knowing Matt, we've all tried to take the people under us and give them those opportunities to talk to coaches and to do that stuff so they at least have some experience. Not everyone does that. So what are some examples, you know, as a guy now who's more seasoned, has had those conversations at a much further level than someone who is in the first conversation with the head coach, and that head coach is pressuring them. Well, you know, we're not strong enough. We're there, you know, whatever it is. We've all been there. So what would you recommend? How did you handle it? How did you fail handling it? And how'd you learn?
Yeah, so what I tried to do was, again, particularly with sports coaches, is you can't go in and tell them that they're doing it wrong, you know, even if you think they are. So you've got to go and ask questions. Coach, you know, Johnny, do you want him heavier? Do you want, like, again, going in to serve. And the two things that you, for me, in terms of leading, you have to be prepared to serve and sacrifice. You know, in other words, you are there to help others and you're going to have to sacrifice something. Like, you might have this great idea, but you have to be prepared to do that. Now, you might leave with everything, but you have to be prepared to sacrifice something. So a lot of it's around the conversation of, listen, you know, Johnny didn't play well. Do you want him heavier? Do you want him lighter? Like, how can we help? What do you want from us? And, that works. And if somebody comes to you and says, I have a coach, you know, come and say, you know, Johnny's not fast Monday, and I'm, you know, the following Monday, Johnny's very fast, man. What do you guys do? We can do anything, like, you mean, or, you know, geez, you know, and it could be, and again, people can be irrational, it could be the opposition, it could be whatever. So, but having the conversation and the coach knowing that you're there to serve them, if they want them lighter, you get them lighter. If they want them stronger, you know, work on getting them stronger. But I think as well that the nuance then becomes, as you build that relationship, is about, you know, demonstrating that he's getting stronger in the weight room, but also then making it clear that it's not simply down to weight room strength. There is a technique element. So you can have guys who are not, you know, who are farm boy strong, so to speak. Yep. And so, but again, that comes with building a relationship with, you know, with the coach.
Yeah. Nice.
So sounds like you're really working hard on these soft skills, and that's one of the biggest things you're going to preach to kind of every different level of the organization. Is there one, two, or three maybe that stand out as most important? And do those change at the different levels, right? If you're up in the administration, the head coach, or, you know, whatever the roles may be, as opposed to the kind of middle management, as opposed to kind of the boots on the ground.
Yeah, so there are about six or seven what I would call amplifier skills. And I define those as skills that, you know, you can have your core set of skills. So in terms of knowing your business, but if you don't have these other additional skills, such as communication, empathy, problem solving, creativity, if you don't have those skills, you will always plateau, because those are the skills that amplify those core basic skills. It's like a tactical, if you will, for normal people. So professionally, you can know all that you want to know about force plates or bench press or whatever, but if you can't communicate that to your staff, to the players, you're dead in the water. If you don't have empathy, if you can't understand other people, like basically the human sociopaths, they can't understand humor, for example, or feelings or emotion, or if you can't problem solve, if you can't see something and go, you know, that's a problem, we got to tackle, or you're not creative in the sense that you can't take, you know, inspiration from diversity and be inclusive. Like, I mean, all of those skills, those amplifier skills, they're going to limit you. And I think communication is critical. And the two most important communication skills for me are listening. Again, being present and observing, like truly listening. And you know the person who's not listening because they're going to jump in straight away. Both of you guys are going to pause after this anyway, but they're going to jump in straight away and they're going to go, oh yeah, yeah, I got you. Or they're going to, have a wonderful answer for you straight away if you ask them a question without even pausing to truly think about it. The second one is self-talk, listening to how you speak about things. And you will find when people, particularly when they talk about themselves, you know, are they being negative towards themselves? Are they saying, you know, but on the other hand, I personally think that one of the other biggest skill I think that is very important at this point in time across the board in every area is critical thinking. The ability to think critically about a problem, to look at it from the opposite perspective. Even when things are going well, look at it, you know, your program's going well, like to red team it, so to speak, like to look at it and go, how could this break? Like, you know, you come off, everything's going well. Okay, how could we be beaten? Like, what are we not doing right? So those are two really important skills. And I think critical thinking is one that is not really encouraged or taught, because our education systems now is based around rote learning and what can you remember and what can you recall. But it's not about your ability to adapt, think critically. And kind of parallel with that, one of the other ones is resilience, like the ability to fail and learn from it. But in the education system, you know, and not in all cases, but in many cases, we don't give people problems and we don't give them problems to solve and see what they come up with. So like, you mean as a teacher, as a coach, sometimes you don't know what the answer is going to be. And you want to see what somebody's going to come up with. Sometimes maybe there isn't an answer, but that's the challenge. You know, try and solve this, you know? And so those are those amplifier skills. I think a lot of coaches, you know, if they sit back and look critically at their own performance, will find, okay, these are some areas that we can really make a difference in.
So one, no pause, don't worry, just going right in.
Yeah, jump in.
I knew it was either one of us was going to do it. So I learned it as Swiss cheese and things, right? Everything, you should Swiss cheese it. And people sometimes get mad. They get defensive. They're not confident. There's a self-efficacy issue, you know, to your point of positive self-talk. People have very low skill around their self-efficacy for themselves. So when someone challenges them or Swiss cheeses it, pokes holes in it, you know, I always presented stuff to people and said, Swiss cheese this for me, because that way I know whether I'm in the right direction or I'm totally off base. Going in, you hit two things, and actually One, it was a long time ago in the conversation. The other was right now. The way people are learning, again, with COVID and things being remote, even look at us right now. We're doing I would love to do this in person, in a room, drinking a beer. You see the body language. You feel the energy. It's a palpable difference versus I'm sitting in my attic. Matt's in his house. You're in your house. You know, so everything now is geared towards low, you know, it's static. It's low reaction. There's not engagement. Mm-hmm. There's however you want to describe it and define it, with, depending on what terms you come from, what category. It's here's the information. Learn it, memorize it, route, spit it back out. And if you have questions, go Google it, because all you're getting is my video lecture and maybe I'll answer your email. So how do you approach that? So that idea, and which is kind of what the box we've shoved everyone in, into the education system, with the comment from a long time ago around gurus. So you were talking about, finding the experts, but there's also a level of finding the experts, but disseminating who you can learn from and who's giving you the snake oil. And in this day and age, in this industry particularly, there is a lot of snake oil. And there is a lot of there's a lot of stuff out there, but that doesn't mean it's good. So, and again, I won't call anyone out. I won't name names or anything. I think
that's fair. I think, I've seen there are some things you go and you wonder, okay, that's nonsense. But then there are some other things that you look at and you go, well, that's not going to work, or that's garbage. But, and I've been guilty of this, and then you meet the coach and they explain to you why they did it and you go, oh, okay, I can kind of see why that might work. And you kind of
let me cut you off 1 second. There's one key caveat to this, and I've said this and I learned this actually from Mo Butler. She actually talked to her earlier tonight. So when I was younger, and she was a strength coach at UConn still, she said to me, look, when you walk into someone else's weight room, you're going to see between 15 and 60 minutes. You're going to have a lot of questions. But what you don't know is the days, weeks, months, and years that got them to that 15 or 60 minutes. So don't judge, right, 15 or 20 minutes of one thing because you don't know without asking. So I'll give that caveat, right, because I think some of that was where you were going, right? There's that caveat. You don't know. I want to switch away from that and more to – what skills do you use to disseminate and distill viable information versus what and how you define the snake oil?
Yeah, so a lot of it comes down to knowing the coach. Do I know them? Who they? Do I know them as people? A lot of it comes down to looking at. And this is a very tricky one as well, but what have they done or who have they coached? The one I think that's really important is, are they coaching in the field? So if somebody is coaching in the field and they say something, I always give them the benefit of the doubt because they're there and they're obviously saying it from a practical position. And I guess in more recent years, a lot of it has been around for me just talking to coaches who are actually, doing things and asking them. In terms of snake oil, I guess this industry will always have that. I think you'll always have, I guess it's based around, if it's too good to be true, it usually is. There's very few things that, early on, I remember supplements, man. Supplement for this, a supplement for that. There's so many, but yeah, particularly when it comes to supplements, it's kind of hard. So I always pick up the phone, call someone. Hey, what do you think of this? What are your thoughts on this? And there are a lot of them. But the other interesting thing is I put them into three categories: useless, which is generally something that's too good to be true; interesting. And useful are usually, there's going to be nothing new in it. It's the basics. The interesting category, though, there are things that seem to work and everything points it to work, but it's just too early in the phase, you know, and they, or they don't have it fully developed, or they're doing more studies. Like, I mean, heart rate variability, creatine, for example, was at that stage early on. Beta-alanine was, I remember way, way back, you know, getting studies on it and looking, and this seems positive, but there's just not a lot of, you know, same with HRV. I was just recording a course on it, and I'm looking back at some of the papers that I'd read, like, you mean, and sometimes you jump to conclusions you make wrong, but there's, again, that interesting bracket's going to be generally the biggest one where you're going to go, you're going to park it in there, you're just going to watch it develop, keep an eye on it, and watch who's using it and see who's actually applying it. But again, the real test then comes, can you make it work in your environment? And so there's lots of things. Like, I mean, you go to different environments, and, you know, I was at one recently and I was asking them, you know, did a really simple program or really simple gym. And I was saying, I was asking them about their choices. I said, do you have this? Do you have this? And they were going, no, we don't, because it just wouldn't work here. Like, a perfect example is altitude, for example. There's only a certain number of people you can actually train in an altitude chamber at any point. If you've got a huge team, it might be useful for rehab, but then you got to have someone to manage it. You got to know the protocols. So there's all of those kinds of things that, again, it might work, but it's not going to just work here. And so there are a lot of conditions, but yeah, it's a really, really important question. And again, a lot of it comes down to an absence of critical thinking.
I really like that one a lot. One of the things that I read about as we're kind of getting ready to have a conversation with you was a great quote you said about the athlete's identity and how an athlete needs to kind of identify as playing a sport, but not being that athlete, not being just that only part of their identity. One of the things that we like to talk about on this is we talk about how coaches identify and become that coach, right? You became the head coach or head, you know, data scientist, whatever term was correct for the 49ers, and you became that person, correct? So one of the things we talk about is how to kind of transition out of that and understand that that's just a small facet of your life. Is that something you could shed some light on and how you've kind of helped other athletes or business members, et cetera, kind of do that?
Well, it actually, that first came to my, you know, or first became aware of it actually in the tactical community where, you know, you ask someone, who are you? And they'll tell you what they do, which becomes a challenge when you transition out and you're no longer doing that, but that's not who you are. And you see it with athletes who transition out as well. You know, and worse still, actually, a good friend still, he's introduced as, you know, former linebacker or sometimes, you know, linebacker four. But that's not who he is. That's what he did. And I think more so today than ever before, particularly because of social media, people are described by their profession, which is fine because that's what you've been introduced as. But so long as you yourself know who you are, and we have this phenomenon of identity and image. Now, there is a danger sometimes as well where your image becomes so well known and becomes so well polished, you keep trying to live up to that, but that's not real. And then you struggle with that. The bigger issue as well is as you grow older and you reach a certain stage in your career, there are more and more things expected of you. You're putting more in situations where you have to make moral ethical choices, which rely on your identity, not on your image. Like, and so if you're a hardworking player, blah, 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 and you get to a certain point or an operator, whatever it might be, that's fine. But at a certain stage, you have leadership positions now. A lot of that has to marry with your values, who you are as a person. The other thing too is that many of the strengths that you developed to get to that point will now become disadvantages. So if you were very ambitious, very driven, very academic, very whatever it is, you get to that position, that's not going to keep you there. Those amplifier skills or the qualities are more important now to develop more so, but you don't know what they are. And also you're confused because those skills that got you there, you're looking at them going, well, that's who I am. No, those are the skills that got you to that position. Who you truly are, you know, what your limitations are, may not get you any further. So you have to be aware of them And sometimes, you know, sometimes you need help figuring those out too.
That's actually a perfect segue right into the next question I had, which was successful sustainability and how you were able to kind of show that, you know, talking about failure to reinforce the basics and things like that. Can you kind of walk the listeners through that a little bit?
Well, I think that, like, just using myself as an example, I think that there were different stages where I would have focused excessively on, trying to understand things to too much of a depth, and then forgetting about, you know, as Joe mentioned earlier, like, I mean, about who it was I was actually speaking to. And one of the best things that ever happened to me was, I think it was my first week at the Niners. Remember, go to the head coach, say, "Hey, listen, I've got to talk to these guys about recovery." And here's me expecting, like, to get 45 minutes in front of them. We've got dinner break now. Team meeting's in an hour. You've got 5 minutes at the start of the meeting. I'm pulling up these presentations, trying to cram, like, I mean, a 45-minute presentation. And so I just scrapped it. And I, you know, sitting back in the office, I'm looking out. I'm looking at a Gatorade sign. And that's when it hit me. Like, I mean, how can, you know, Gatorade, Mercedes, Nike sell? So these guys go home, play on their phone, see an advert, and they'll buy a car. You know what I mean? So how can they sell something? And I can't sell a piece of broccoli to them. And so I put together like a 5-minute presentation that was really about trying to find the motivation for them to trigger, to get them first, and try and get a small win. This is why it's important that you got to listen to me. I'll be back, hopefully, or I'll be around. Come and get me. But this is why. And that was it. And it worked. It worked well. But I think sometimes, again, taking the time to reflect on why certain things fail or they're not working can be, you know, real blessings in disguise for coaches. You know, I think sometimes coaches don't see. They get annoyed with things. But rather than going, "This is a great learning opportunity, man. This is good. I will get better at this or because of this."
And I'm sure that's something you've seen a lot working with other people about not taking that time to do the kind of after action review or, you know, whatever term you want to use there. I know you've certainly heard that term before working down there. Have you found a better way to do it or a better system or system you typically use yourself when doing that with either a business or tactical setting or business setting that works better?
One of the points that you guys mentioned earlier, which probably should have referenced again, was you know, the Swiss cheesing it. Like, I mean, so, you know, one of the criticisms that I remember getting was, "You're too intimidating." And what, you know, after I heard that twice, I went, okay, that's it. So with interns, with staff, "Guys, put this up here, but I want you to tear this apart, like, break this for me." That was the new phrase, was, "Don't take what I say as gospel, because it's not." And same with even game changer, different things. I would always say to people, "I don't want someone to take my stuff and just use it. Like, break it, own it. It's not perfect. It's not right. Like, figure it out. Like, there's ideas here. You go make it better, but don't." And, you know, so when, you know, even the question around gurus, nobody's infallible. Like, I mean, everybody's going to make mistakes. Everybody's going to get it a little bit wrong. They don't know your environment. So you want that. You want people who are going to really critique what you're doing. And if you're a coach and you have people working for you and they're not coming to you pointing out things that might be wrong, you got a bigger problem. You got a really big problem. I used to, you know, I'd walk up beside coaches and whisper in their ear and go, "Hey, what are we doing wrong?" And just get them one-on-one. Say, "Hey, tell me, what are we not doing right? What are you not happy about?" And sometimes it takes a while, but now I get some brilliant feedback. And it's interesting as well, because what you find is, you know, "Well, coach, we're not doing enough speed." "Yeah, actually, you know what? I agree with you, but this is why." "Oh, okay." And they might not, you know, but they understand, okay, we've only got a limited amount of time, so this is what we're trying to get. And so, but unless you have that conversation, you don't realize this coach is doing what you asked him to do, but he's not fully bought in and he doesn't agree. And sometimes they're just being very compliant, which is admirable, but it's important that you explain and people understand. Sometimes you just have to, you know, we have to do things, but maybe I didn't explain why. Or, and also, again, there've been times where, you know, coaches say, listen, we're doing too much running, we're doing too much this. And you know what? Sometimes they're right. Sometimes you go, you know what? I think you're right. Or why? Tell me more. Why do you think that? And you know, that's so. Yeah, that used to be one of my phrases. You know, break this for me. Tell me how this isn't. Tell me why. The other phrase was, tell me why this won't work. Tell me, you know, and really tear it apart. And the other thing too is that the added value of that in a group is that you're demonstrating that you want feedback and you're not above getting criticism. So when you go to them and you go to say, hey, they've seen you take criticism and take in a positive sense. You've set the example for how someone should take critique, you know. But and the last point on this is that the other word that I tried to use more of was we, as opposed to I. Like, I mean, this is our program. This is what we're going to. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's inclusive. So, you know, if this fails, we're all failing.
No, again, one of the things me and Matt pretty much say every episode is you just put about 40 things we could shoot off into that one thing. No,
good questions.
But thank you. It's part of the depth of the answer is what we wanted to present to people, because these are the type of conversations people should be having, should be listening to, and should be following up on. Like, again, one of the things we haven't really, and again, I say we, that's one of my keys to success is us and we instead of I and me, because, and I purposely would say that, you know, even now in the business setting I'm in, I say us all the time and people like look at me. I'm like, yeah, it's us. Like us, like we're here together. It's us. I do something totally different than you, but it's still us. So one of the things I think people don't get is the we. So other than saying it, what were some of the things or methods you used to instill that? The feedback is amazing. That's a great thing. I think we've all done it in using the word we, but what else? What's another? Is it taking people out to eat? Is it giving everyone a day off? Is it taking everyone to go play paintball? What's the we things you did other than use the word?
Funny thing is, I probably asked fewer questions about work. So one tip for any coaches, when you walk into your assistants, what have they got on their desk? Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what they have on their desk? Like, is it some people have, a religious icon? Some people have a photo of their wife or the kids. That's important to them. So that's what you talk about. If you want to strike up a conversation, remember kids' names, their wife, their partner, you know, wife's going for surgery. If you can't remember those things, why are they going to want to work for you? Because the other thing too is like, I mean, these are bright people who are working for you. They're going to do their job and they're going to, but they have to know that you appreciate them. And early on, starting in the industry, you know, I didn't believe in any of that. To me, it was just get the win. Like, you mean you had sick child at home? I wouldn't have even have known it. But as I, you know, became more mature, I started to realize those things are important to me and they matter to me. And also, you know, when you've got responsible people working for you, you have to build up that relationship, and you care, like, you mean you genuinely care. Like, if you know that, that they've got, like, when you know that they've got a kid's birthday coming up, you know, you can go, hey, listen, when we get done today at 1 o'clock, get home, small things like that. And you genuinely care and you try and help them out. The big one for me is interns though. Like, I mean, cause you know, it's a tough gig, and if they're working hard for you. And the other thing too is, like, I mean, very often in our industry, you got to ask somebody to do something for you that, like, it might be to come in early on a particular morning, or to do, you know, or to help out, or to monitor something, a rehab program, something that you just can't get someone to. Well, the first time you ask someone to do that, it better not be you better have actually looked out for that person first if you want it done properly. And so, you know, I used to try do my best, try and look after interns as best I could, because some of those people put in incredible work. And again, it's one thing is that, for example, if you're hiring someone and everybody gives references of people who they've worked for, and you know, I would always ask, hey, have you got a number or two of any interns who've worked for you, and follow up with them, because anybody can make a good impression with their boss, but find somebody who's worked for them. That's the difference. Then you find out what the person's really like.
I freaking love that. I absolutely love that. And that's something that I'm definitely going to use in the future for sure. And we're going to use that. One of the things you also mentioned was your ability to stand up as a leader and say, hey, you know, go at this, try to break down my thoughts, my program, my feelings, my messaging, my branding, whatever you were working on in that moment, right? As somebody in the middle level, but trying to get their boss, supervisor, whoever to kind of buy into that same mentality. Have you ever seen that done successfully? Because I know I work for some strength coaches who, if I tried to bring that up, it would not have gone well. I would have been on my, you know, hands and knees with a toothbrush probably cleaning the gym floor. So any suggestions on somebody out there who might want to kind of introduce that to a supervisor, et cetera?
Yeah, so like, I mean, one of the things I've done before is, you know, say, coach, so we're doing it like this so that we get, and whatever rationale you give is the wrong one. And that forces them to correct you. So rather than saying it's wrong, or rather, like, you go way off and they go, no, we're doing it because of this. Oh, okay. So should we add in something, whatever you actually meant, the second time around? And, or you say, hey, coach, you know, or they'll say, we're doing it like this because of this. So should I add in some more of this to balance that out? And they may not, it may be something that they haven't thought of. And you know, you just do it. And so sometimes it's more to do with ego, and people don't want to be seen done in front of a group, which is particularly with superiors. So you know, try and find a quiet moment, or, hey, coach, listen, I had a question about today's program. You know, for myself, or how do you program, when you program this, is it because of this or what? And you're genuinely interested, because again, you might see something that's wrong, but you don't know the why. And that's, you know, that's your boss's problem for not explaining it to you. But, you know, sometimes you just got to do it. But it's, you know, just having that brief questioning, and it's ask questions, but do it in the right way.
Yeah.
And pick the right moment.
Yeah, connecting the dots is important, but timing is just
timing helps. Timing helps.
I like that. I like that Jedi mind trick though, of like, ask them one, kind of get them over here, and then bring the real question in. That's a nice touch right there. I like that a lot.
Yeah, and so, like, I mean, because, you know, if you point out, like, I mean, so coaches put a lot of time into putting something together, and if you point out an obvious thing that was wrong that they hadn't thought of, you know, there is the danger that they may feel threatened or feel insecure. And so you do it in the best possible way you can. Because you're not trying to make yourself look better than someone. It's never going to work anyway.
Yeah. All right. At this point, we're about 90 minutes in. We want to be respectful of your time. So we're going to start to wrap this up, and we're going to bring in the three questions we asked everyone, right? So, you know, we kind of kept this at 100,000 feet, a little bit of a trajectory of who you and your profession. We dug into some different areas. We didn't even dig really too far into the business side. You know, how are you running your business today? How are you marketing? How are you getting clients? How do you look at your finances? So maybe a part two coming down when we drill into some of that stuff. First question of our big three, our fantastic three, terrific three. Matt, you say it different every single time. I have them all written down. Phenomenal three, I think, was one you used one time too. Yeah, just got to make sure I get them all so that we cover all the bases. First one. So I always come at this on two approaches. So there's Fergus, the guy, and then there's, you know, Dr. Fergus, the professional, right? You have a PhD, Dr. Fergus, and I'll use that as the delineator between the two people. How do you find balance, and what does balance mean to you? And people have pointed out, and I always do it, is it balance like the scales of justice, or?
Yeah. I think it's important that, and I would encourage all coaches to do this, is to, over a period of time, identify what they see as their purpose. Like, I mean, what do you, like, why are you here, so to speak? Why are you interested in strength and conditioning? And so for me, it's not that kind of separator. For me, it's, I genuinely love helping people achieve their definition of success. Now, there's a conversation around what success is. So for me, it's, that's really what is passionate to, is my passion. So I don't have a separation between the two. There are things that I do for myself that I enjoy that are separate from it. But for me, it's helping. Like, that's where I get reward. That's the selfish part of it. It's not that, I'm not Mother Teresa. It's not like, I get a huge reward from that. I get energy from it. I learn, and that feeds that learning side for me. And so that's the balance for me, is in doing that. And it also, as you help other people, you learn more about yourself, because you see things that other people are doing, either doing well or doing poorly. And if you're helping them, you're also, you take the time to reflect and you go, you know what, that actually I'm doing that as well. I should be aware of that. So, I think one of the challenges that a lot of people, particularly in strength and conditioning, have is the work-life balance is really viewed in terms of hours. It's never going to work because the hours demanded are so huge that if you don't have that flow and you can't ride with it. The other danger as well is that sometimes, because we look for structure and for certainty, we do it in a very structured way. So it's always at 9 o'clock. It's always at this, always at that. Life doesn't really work that way. So you have to understand what your purpose is. So you, when you go to work, you are content that your home life and your work life is balanced. I've got that wrong badly. And for me, that was important for me to recognize that there is a balance between the two. Mm-hmm. Because you put so much energy into work, but you're not looking after yourself, or it's not fulfilling your values for you as a person. Like it, mm-hmm. And so then there's something, what will tend to happen there is that there's something underneath, there's an undercurrent that's bubbling up, and there's something bugging you, but you can't put your finger on it.
And that's an amazing point. Again, going back to a few minutes ago when we were talking, asymmetric development, understanding failure to reinforce basics. One of the notes was, it's the way I say it, was if your actions aren't aligned with your values, you are going to have catastrophe. And it's just that simple.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the problems that you get is in organizations is that you're following orders, you do what you're told. Mm-hmm. But that over a period of time still starts, there's an undercurrent in your life that you're not, worked with, coaching somebody recently who's working for one of the top companies in the country. And, it's not, she has issues with what they're doing because it just doesn't align with, her value system. And so that discontent is coming out. And so she's made a change and she's found, that balance again in her life. But yes, you will struggle, and you can sacrifice it for a period of time because you'll justify it because of a paycheck or whatever. Yep. But it is going to bite you eventually.
Yep. That was a great answer. And like you said, at some point, it's not about the time. It's not about the money. It's about happiness and finding a true inner peace almost, or some sort of value that is more important to you than either one of those things, which is extremely rare for some people to ever find.
True.
So the next question for you, Fergus, is, what is your best investment for you, either as a person, as a coach, as a data scientist, as a speaker, as an author? What is the best investment for you or your business for less than $500? Or if you can't think of one, we'll let you go up to $1,000.
It's probably been the price of a cup of coffee, meeting, and there's probably 10 or 20 of people who you just go, you know, you've sat down, you've had a cup of coffee with, and they've shared time. Like, yeah, there's been lots of things I've spent a lot of money on that have been impactful, but yeah, there's been just a lot of people you hang out with, and you and it's not, again, it's not about taking, it's about having a conversation with and going, you know, I've been thinking about this, or does this make sense to you? Or, you know, and I, you know, I know some people, and it's something that I actually want to do shortly, do a weekly call where people can actually, just for the cost of a cup of coffee, just do that. Because for me, and we were talking about this before we started recording, I wanted to create like a Tinder app for coaches, where if you're in a particular city, you can see who's in the locality, you know, so that you could go have a cup of coffee with them. You know, because you're on the road somewhere, you go to Florida and you go to some city, you know, or the price of a beer or whatever. Like, you mean, there have been so many dinners or whatever that, you know, you buy and you leave and you're scribbling on napkins or beer mats. You know, you didn't wear those big napkins and you're scribbling and, you know, you're pulling out your pen. And
I would be your first person on that app. I have my Tinder pro, I'd have my picture ready. I can't tell you how many times my wife and I have driven to different parts of the country to go, you know, vacation, go to a wedding, whatever. Mm. And I'm like, babe, just give me like 3 hours, please. Please, I promise I'll be right back. I'll buy you a nice dinner after. I am
Here's the credit card, you know, like, but there's been so many of those. You sit and you know, and you build a relationship and those are the conversations. Because the other thing too is people can tell you things in person that they're not going to, you know, this is why this failed, or you hear the reality of why something happened as well, which has been invaluable.
Yep. So kind of a perfect lead into the third question. How do you sharpen your sword? Who coaches you? I imagine your answer is going to be some of those cups of coffee, but however you want to go with it, same thing, whether is it you, the guy, you, the professional, is it a mix of both? You know, do you have one person? Is it a hive mind collective?
Yeah, I got about six guys who I would check in with regularly. You know, some guys who have who I will ask, you know, I will call them up and go, does this seem right? Or I'll get their thoughts on it. And, you know, I want their brutal honest opinion. There are veterans. There's a number of veterans who I'll call. And depending on the question and what experience they've had. And girls, but they're people who I know are going to tell me the truth, because Christ, anyone can tell you that you're doing the right thing. You know, I want like that brutal honest opinion, because I don't have tolerance. It's probably a failing, but I don't tolerate, you know, bullshit easy. Like, you mean, it's just, I'm not. And that's again where, when people are doing things to the best of their ability and they're screwing up or whatever, go for it. I have so much respect, and I've got a number of people who I vehemently disagree with on a series of different things, but I will go to them before I'll go to some others who agree with me, you know, or are aligned in terms of philosophy or whatever. But I know that they're going to tell me the truth, and I want to hear that from them, even though we disagree on so many things. And I have so much respect for people who have a particular view that's different from mine, but believe it and are authentic about it, because that's someone I can trust. Even though they don't think the same way as me, I can trust them because they're telling me. People who just change their mind too quickly, maybe, or who can't, that's not being authentic. That's not being honest. And so, you know, that group of like six or seven people that I have are, you know, that's who I rely on.
Nice.
You strike me as a guy who's had so many different life experiences and has so many different kind of little inner circles. You strike me as a guy who's got two or three guys for this topic, two or three guys for that topic. And like, you kind of,
there's only about six people. Like, I mean, my joke is that you only need six people to carry your coffin. You know what I mean? Or four very, very strong ones. Like, I mean, you do, you know, there's only about six people who, you know, I'll absolutely call, because in, you need those people in your life that you can call and that you can talk through things. And I'm thinking of doing this. What are your thoughts? I'm going to tell you the truth. And that's it. You get to the solution quicker when things are authentic, like just upfront and honest.
No, that's a great answer. I just, like I said, you have such a wealth of experience and so many different life experiences. You've had such a cool journey. I just figured you were one of those guys. I'm sure you have friends and, you know, people you know in each section. I guess I just assumed you kind of lean on each one, but I like that.
You said cool journey. It didn't seem cool. There's plenty of times where it didn't seem cool, you know? Like I said, getting in a cab, coming back from Chula Vista, man, staying in the shadiest motel. So I sleep with one eye open in case somebody, like, the only thing you own at that stage is a laptop and a hard drive, and that's your word, that's everything, and you don't want to lose it. And like, you mean, so there's, it might seem cool, but there'll be plenty of, yeah, interesting moments.
It's only cool now looking back because you're successful. If you hadn't made it, it would be terrible. And I think Joe and I are the same on that. I remember plenty of crappy, sleeping on couches, sleeping on floors, just to meet the coolest strength coach I possibly could get to answer my emails and, you know, be respectful to. And then same thing, bunch of beer money, bunch of writing on napkins.
Yeah.
The smartest guy in the world.
Yeah. No, that's part of the journey. And I think the other thing too is, I think when you go through those difficult moments, you value, there's a few things. First of all, you see the guys coming through who you want to help because you see the same values, and also you appreciate it, you know, a lot more than if you got it like in Limitless.
Yep. No. Awesome, Fergus. Not only did
guys, it's been a pleasure.
Bring my reference back full circle, but you know. Yeah, I was gonna say, hey, it's like you've done this before. So we're gonna give you a second. How do people find you? What else do you want them to know? Is it a book? Is it a name? Is it, you know, what's your 30-second window to do whatever you want to do?
Just my website, fergusconley.com. I don't have anything to sell. Like, I mean, whatever I have is out there, and I'm putting a 12-month course together just based on team sports. So at the minute, actually, just been interviewing some of those six people who've all worked in team sport, because I want to provide a resource for coaches specifically in team sport. No offense to the other sports, but one of the things I think that for me is always looking back and going, what did I not have that, you know, as I was coming through, and can I provide that to someone else? I think that is something that, is important for me, because I think there's so many great experts out there, but then how do you pull together and make it work in team sports? So, but thank you guys. Really appreciate it. Had a great time. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for joining us. Matt, anything else from you?
Fergus, you knocked it out of the park, dude. And once you brought everything around full circle.
I'm going to go watch Limitless tonight. That's what I'm going to do.
I'm going to watch
Limitless.
I'm just watching it for Bradley Cooper. The movie was whatever. No, it was fantastic, man. You clearly know your stuff. And
well, let's do this in person sometime when all this COVID's over.
Yes. All about it. I love that.
So,
guys, stay safe.
Everybody, have a great night. Catch you later.